behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Scott Benjamin.
And I am Ben, not a Mason, Bolin.
Not a Mason.
I just feel that it is necessary for me to have that disclaimer in the beginning. I think that the Masons overall are tremendous forces of good in communities. But we also should say, Scott, at the top of this episode, that you and I are from the outside looking in.
Correct. That's right. Now, I have a great uncle who was a Freemason. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I think my dad now owns his, he's passed away. I think my dad now owns a, owns his Freemason ring.
Ah.
He's kind of passed down. Now, he doesn't wear it because I don't think you're allowed to do that.
Right.
But he does have that. He has, he's that in his possession. Kind of an interesting thing. I mean, there's a lot of symbols, that go along with the Freemasons and the Masons and the Shriners,
sure,
as we'll
sure
talk about.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of misconceptions about what they are as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know a little bit about Masonry, Freemasonry, right? You know
yeah
quite a lot about it, actually. I know very little about it. So what can you tell me about Freemasons and Masons, Ben?
Okay. So, Freemasons and Shriners are often conflated. You know, and for someone on, again, on the outside looking in, this can be a little bit confusing. So, Freemasons are a fraternity or brotherhood, that works together. And I know it sounds vague, but to be a positive force in the community. So mm-hmm you'll often hear about Freemasons, sponsoring different charities or assisting with, volunteer efforts and things like that. Shriners are a related but distinct brotherhood. The basis for membership in a shrine or temple is to be a Mason already.
Okay, so I've seen it written this way, that all Shriners are Masons, but not all Masons are Shriners.
Exactly. Like, all mazes are puzzles, but not all puzzles are mazes.
Okay, I got it. So, okay, so you can be a Mason. You have to accomplish several different levels, I believe, before you're even eligible to become a Shriner.
Right. You need to be a Master Mason.
Oh, okay. So you have to be in it quite a while. I mean, you have to, I think it's like, the different degrees, right? You have to
yeah
become, you have to go pass through these different degrees. The third and final degree
mm-hmm
is when you become a Master Mason, and then you're eligible to become a Shriner. And the Shriners are what they call a fraternity of, I guess,
right,
Masons.
Now, and it's important, you know, often Masons and Shriners and Masonry in general gets a bad name, and that's because there's a lot of misinformation out there. And
yeah, I've seen it written so many places, like, you know, the question mark about the Freemasons and these secret societies, as they like to call them, right? They say, you know, do they manipulate world events in some kind of like grand conspiracy? Like they're going to try to rule the world
right
or what? Yeah, but that's not true.
No. Nope.
I mean, and the roots of this whole thing, they go back hundreds of years, but it was such a simple thing. And where it comes from is just the name of the profession that these guys had.
Yeah, the stonemasons.
Yeah, they were stonemasons and craftsmen, mm-hmm, and they would gather together in these lodges.
Mm-hmm.
And at the lodges, you know, this time, you know, where they were just, I guess, share the brotherhood of the craft.
Right.
And, it became known as, you know, these Masonic guilds, I guess, you know,
mm-hmm,
that, could talk about the tools of the trade and, you know, the trade itself. And over time, the members kind of organized into these Masonic guilds and,
mm-hmm,
and the tools of their trade,
sure,
you know, like the square and I think the compass, those became kind of the symbols for this group and this gathering.
Mm-hmm.
And people thought there was something a little bit hinky about the whole thing, right?
Yeah, hinky is a good word. They thought there was some skullduggery. They thought there were some dark shenanigans going on. And that typically occurs, it's just part of human nature, Scott, when something is secret, people assume all sorts of strange things about it. But let's go ahead and set this straight. Neither Masonry nor the Shriner organizations are in any way religions. They're not religious groups. Now, at some point, in the, in Masonic membership, you have to acknowledge a supreme being, but that's the closest they get to religion, you know, and then there are a lot of other organizations that do the same and we don't call those religions. I guess what we're doing here is we're just giving you the broad strokes here. We've got a lot of listeners in our audience who are probably Masons, maybe even Shriners.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are, then you tuned in to the right episode, because we're going to have some fun with this one.
And they could maybe tell us how we just butchered the explanation of what that what the whole thing is all about.
Well, we kept it high level.
We did, I think. And, you know, I know that there's so much more to it than this. And we're just trying to give, again, a high level description of what it's all about, because I think they get a bad rep, you know, from some people who just don't know, the people that don't understand what it's all about.
Right. And you see, you know, one movie late night on the science fiction channel.
And in truth, the organizations are on the level, and they're, and they're really like, they do so much good in the community, and we'll talk about how much good they do in the community. Specifically, we're going to focus on the Shriners in this episode, because this is where it comes down to it. This is why you're learning all about Shriners and Freemasons, right? Because we're going to talk about those cool little parade vehicles that they drive around in and do precision maneuvers and everything. This is where it's all going. But there's so much involved in this, and I found so many little tangential side things in this episode.
Little nuggets of wisdom.
So many cool things about, you know, the manufacture of these vehicles and the different types of vehicles and where they came from. And this one's loaded with stuff like that. So keep listening if you're interested in, like, go-karts and that type of thing.
Right.
And the history of the organization itself, I mean, the Shriners go back to, you know, I mentioned Freemasons and Masons go back, you know, hundreds of years.
Way, way back.
Well, the Shriners were organized somewhere around 1872, I believe. So that's about 142 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the Shriners Hospitals, which we'll talk about that as well.
Yeah.
1920. So that's when those were organized, about 1920, so 94 years ago.
And it happened because of a tragic event, a polio outbreak in the U.S. in 1919. And again, nowadays, we don't often think of polio unless we're thinking about, you know, U.S. presidents or foreign countries. But for the, you know, for the last three generations or so, we've had a working polio vaccine. Check this out, Scott. In 1919, polio killed 6,000 people in the United States. Just killed them, not counting the almost 30,000 that were paralyzed. So many of these people who were paralyzed needed medical care that they just didn't have. So in 1920, the Shrine's Imperial Session, voted to, make everybody pay $2 a year to build the first Shriners Hospital in Shreveport, I think.
Shreveport. Okay. So that, but that has expanded now to this point.
Yep.
To over, I think it, not over, I think they have 22 facilities all over the world that are dedicated to children's care. And the cool thing about this, Ben, maybe the coolest thing about this is that, you know, not only is it doing a lot of good to develop these children's hospitals,
right?
There's no billing department in these hospitals at all, and that makes them very unique in that all of the money that the Shriners raise through all of their charitable efforts, you know, in the communities, all of that money goes to running and operating these Shriners hospitals for children. Again, these 22 hospitals that have, you know, since 1920, that, you know, the parents and the families of these children with whatever, you know, illness they have.
Sure.
They haven't had to pay a dime.
Yeah. And there was no restriction on race, religion, color, or national origin. The only real requirement is that there has to be a chance of being able to improve the child's health.
So it's focused on pediatric medical care. I mean, they have world-class research and educational opportunities for medical professionals that you know, want to enter the Shriners hospitals. They're not paying us or anything to do this. We're just talking about them because it's such an important part of what the Shriners do. And a lot of people, you know, a lot of people will only see that parade day image of the Shriners. You know, it's typically some, you know, older guys. I'm gonna generalize this, right?
All right, go for it.
Some older guys, a lot of them, kind of on the heavy side. I hate to say it. I mean, I know they're trying to change that image, but some of these older guys, you know, happy guys, they're wearing a big fez on top of their head.
Yeah, they're in the mini car.
Yeah, the tiny little cars. They're doing precision driving.
Figure eights.
It looks ridiculous, but it's so cool to watch as well. And we'll get to, you know, the precision driving and the vehicles and all that. But I thought it was important to mention these hospitals and just the stuff that they do.
They're helping people, and although it is fun and it is lighthearted to see some of the antics on those Shriner cars, we wanted to make sure that we open up the episode by saying that there are tremendously good things about this. It's not just if you don't know much about Shriners other than seeing them in parades, we want to assure you, it's not just some people having a good time on tiny cars. That's just one part of a multifaceted organization. But back to the cars, because I don't know if I could say this on a family show, but they are badass.
They really are. And it goes back a long ways. I mean, I've got the history of the mini cars, I guess. Is it, you know, one quick thing here.
Yeah.
I've seen it, you know, when you talk about Shriners and their parade vehicles, a lot of times you'll see it, you know, that they call them the Shriners parade units or the Shriners motor patrols or the Shriners right. mini car unit. Mm. There's a lot of different names for these different units of Shriners that like to do this. Now, there's a lot more Shriners behind the scenes because I think they have close to 500,000 people that are involved with Shrining. Shriners, that I guess are Shriners. And they raise hundreds of millions of dollars throughout the community. So they do a lot of good, and you just see like the tip of the iceberg, I guess, when you're at the parades. You know, these are the motorcade unit guys.
Right. There are also units that are, for example, horse units. So there's horse riding.
Yeah, that's right. And marching precision units as well. Right. They love the precision stuff. That's always kind of interesting to me that, you know, they like to do precision driving. They like to have the horse units where they do little tricks on those. They have marching units that may march with, you know, lawn chairs or something like that and do some unusual things there. It's always fun to watch the Shriners in parades.
Oh, two side notes. Okay.
Okay.
Kind of unrelated. I got this quote from a Shriner, in an article where a Shriner describes the organization. "We're the party animal Masons," one Shriner explained in a glancing comment as they unloaded their cars. "We like to have a good time." I thought that was funny because there's a little story in here about how the Shriners came to be. Apparently, a few Masons who like to extend the lodge meeting into local taverns decided to do this fraternity with a Near East theme. So it started as this idea of having fun that became this world-changing, positive organization, and probably already started out that way. So that's why Shriners have kind of this reputation as the fun party guys, because that's what they like to do. And
that's what started them. I mean, back in 1872, they decided we're going to be the fun branch of the Masons.
Yeah, and these mini cars come in so many varieties that I was trying to think about this off air, Scott. Like, how do we properly represent the variety?
How about this? Okay. I'll just laundry list some of the ones that I've seen in this last week or so as we've been researching this.
Okay.
About that. All right. Yeah. So I've seen tractor trailers. I've seen stock cars.
Yeah.
Indy cars, ambulances, prowlers, pickup trucks, Model Ts, 1957 Chevys. Old Thunderbirds. I've seen, the General Lee used as a Shriner car.
Yeah.
Old Roadsters, like Ford Roadsters. I've seen Corvettes. I've seen just all kinds of vehicles. Bar stools.
Tow trucks.
Tow trucks. That's another big one.
That one made me crack up.
4x4s of all types. I mean, the key here is that they all match. These guys have matching fleets of vehicles that they like to parade, you know, during these big events, these community events. And there's always some kind of precision driving that goes along with them. And I found, Ben, you know, before we even go to the history of this.
Okay.
I found that they do a lot of practice on these things in order to get these down. Because if you watch a Shriner group in action, I mean, it really is kind of unnerving how close they get to each other. It could cause a serious accident. I mean, it's serious business when you're, you know, in a vehicle that'll go 40 miles an hour and you're on a city street with people on the curbside watching you and you're trying to swerve in and out. And, you know, there's a lot of legitimate precision driving that's going on at these things.
And as earlier established in our episode on parade floats, those poor guys driving the parade float have no chance of seeing you on that tiny motorcycle, swerving into some figure eights.
No, definitely. And the practice that I mentioned leads up to, and I didn't know this until just recently either, they have a couple of big conventions. And did you know that at the conventions, they have a lot of contests, which we don't get to see. You know, this isn't the public parade day type stuff. This is they have competitions between different Shriner groups with their parade units, and they have, you know, outright races.
Mm-hmm.
They also do some precision driving type competitions.
Some obstacle course stuff.
Exactly right, with penalties handed out, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So, you know, can you imagine how fun that would be to watch something like that happening with different Shriner groups competing against each other in precision driving skills competitions?
I mean, that's going to be one heck of a race.
How cool would that be? I mean, so I was kind of digging into, you know, Shriner cars for sale and, you know, places that you can go. And I found places all over the place, at least here in the United States, that sell these.
Yeah.
And, there's places like Go-Karts USA and Promo Karts and East Coast Mini Classics. And there's just so many of these places around that will offer, fleets of vehicles to Shriners, sometimes at a discount. If you're a Shriner, they'll offer you, you know, if you're going to buy a dozen of these things or 18 or 20 of these at a time,
mm-hmm.
you know, you can get a significant discount on them, and they're all going to be exactly the same. And that's what you want, right?
For these, want that uniformity
for these drill teams. That's right.
So one thing that I should apologize to you for, Scott, is that we were just about to talk about the history and I got so excited about that Shriner quote that I interrupted. So please, knock us out. When did these cars actually hit the scene?
All right. Well, this is the kind of, this is the part that was confusing to me because Shriners have been around since the late 1870s.
Right.
I'm sorry, 1872.
Yeah.
And go-karts have been around for a long, long time. You know, kids have always kind of messed around with engines and, you know, wooden frames and things like that, and then metal frames.
Right. But when did the two converge, right?
The two finally came together in about the mid-1960s. And I'm going to read from an article here, and I promise I won't read much. There's a couple of side notes that I want to stop for here along the way. But there's an article called Shriner Mini Cars, a fun way for a club to give back. It's from the Midland Daily News in Midland, Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually about a year old, and it just has a really concise way of putting the history of Shriner vehicles. And it was told by a guy named Doug Marsh, who is a Shriner, a younger Shriner. I think he's in his 20s, as a matter of fact, which is kind of odd to me anyways. He concisely puts the history of mini cars this way. He says that it was a project that was originally contracted by General Motors in about 1965, and the go-kart frames were built by Rupp Industries of Mansfield, Ohio, which built go-karts, mini bikes, and snowmobiles up until about the mid-1970s. And it was based on on the Dart Kart model from Rupp Industries. And I want to tell you about Rupp in just a minute.
Okay.
They had something like a 3.5 horsepower motor, you know, unique body styles that were patterned after different cars of the day. And this one in particular, this project that General Motors contracted, was modeled after something called the Monza SS, which is a 1963 Corvair concept vehicle. And it was clearly meant to look exactly like this concept vehicle. And these cars, Ben, if you ever see the Monza SS mini car that were created by Rupp Industries in the mid-1960s, it looks really, really close to what the 1968 Corvette looks like.
Huh.
But it's 5 years prior to that. So, interesting that they've done this. Now, of course, the Monza SS, the full-scale concept vehicle, was built by General Motors, and that's what eventually led to the Corvette. But, you know, they were building at Rupp this little mini version of it, and Shriners kind of grabbed onto that and said, we can use this to do some of our parade stuff that we've been doing.
Right, because they wanted to promote more of a positive image in local communities, and the way to do that was to be the coolest people at the parade. I'm okay, my opinion is coming out on that last part of the sentence, but I do agree with myself, I guess, that they are the coolest people on the parade.
I agree.
So this manufacturing of these mini cars takes off. And by the 70s, we have other companies that are also manufacturing these.
Yeah, that's right. But, you know, one thing I'm going to mention about the late 60s still before we get to the 70s is that, you know, the vehicle itself was called the Monza Junior. And then later they did some body and paint changes to the same thing. And they called it the Chevy Junior sometime around 1968. And this is really when they started to kind of get the idea that maybe it'd be cool if, you know, other Shriners groups also gathered some of these fleets of vehicles and used them in parades because it really gets the word out. It's like, who were those guys on those neat little cars that, you know, have bodies on them? Because go-karts up until this point mostly just had metal frames, you know,
right.
Homemade bodies, you know, sometimes. But this was something that was mass-produced and they were all identical and so, you know. And
they were kitted out.
Yeah, exactly right. They were really, really cool things. And now, they were built for a couple of different purposes. It wasn't just for Shriners, obviously. They were built for prizes at auto shows, toys for children, of course, which you would expect, right?
Yeah.
And this is maybe one of the coolest things. And I've got two side notes already that I want to get to here. So they were even used as part of the Flint-based Safetyville, USA, which was a miniature town that featured working traffic lights and paved roads, which would teach young motorists how to drive. Now, you can imagine I want to get to that, right?
Right.
All right, so let's get back to Rupp Industries first.
Okay.
All right, so Rupp Industries, who builds all these, the owner of this company, his name is Herbert Mickey Rupp III, and he was a race car driver. He drove in the USAC Championship Car Series, which also raced at the Indy 500. So he was an Indy 500 driver in 1965.
Wow, okay.
Creates this Rupp Industries in Mansfield, Ohio, which is his hometown in the late 1950s. So before he's even an IndyCar driver, he's doing this. He's a race car driver anyways. But he built these, we'll call them iconic, go-karts, mini bikes. I guess if you look up a Rupp mini bike, they're very, very valuable at this point. Snowmobiles, motorcycles, and later on, Rupp Marine was formed out of this whole thing. And so, you know, this Rupp Industries was the place to go to at that time to get something like this. And that's why General Motors went to them. They said, you know, we trust you. We know you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
We need X number of these vehicles for these auto show giveaways and, you know, just to sell in general.
One question.
Yeah.
Did Rupp Industries do any tether car stuff?
Oh, I don't know about that.
But it seems like they would, doesn't it?
It seems like they could. I mean, it's a much, much smaller scale.
Yeah.
But it seems like that type of thing in that era would have been perfect for
right.
that.
Right. I'm going to look into that. We'll go back
that
to
that. That is really cool. But if you look up Rupp vehicles from this day, they're very, very valuable.
All right. I can't wait. I have to know more about this. Let's go to Safetyville.
Okay. Safetyville, USA. Now, this is something that I absolutely had to dig into. I only had a few minutes, though, to look into it. I want to... you know, check on this even more. I think there's a potential podcast topic on this whole
all
thing.
Right.
And it's that cool.
Now you said it's in Flint, but there's
Michigan.
More than one.
It's in Flint, Michigan. There's one that's operating right now, I believe, in California, but it's a little different. Okay. It's like a modern version in California. This one in Flint was around, I want to say, in the early 1970s. It closed around 1982. Now, Flint, Michigan, there's a park and the name is Kearsley Park. And I guess it was on the east side of that park that this the Safetyville happened. And Safetyville, if you look it up, there's so many cool old photos of this. They would have these cars that we just talked about, you know, the Chevy Junior and the Monza Junior,
yeah.
ones that the Shriners use. They use these to teach young kids how, like, the rules of the road, how to drive. And you would actually get a Safetyville license when you go there, when you completed it.
Right.
And it would have a like a report card of how you did that day, and they would hand that to your parents. And it would say, like, you know, Johnny went the wrong way on a one-way street.
Classic Johnny.
We caught him bumping into the driver in front of him three times, and we had to revoke his driving for the
day. This kid's a monster.
Yeah, that kind of thing. But it was kind of neat that it had scale businesses and buildings, like city buildings.
Weird.
The kids would drive in these little go-karts on streets that looked like, you know, mimicked city
yeah.
streets with street lights, you know, operating street lights.
Sure, street signs.
Taught them the ways of the road well before they ever got behind the wheel of a real vehicle. And it's such a cool little bit of American history to look back and see these photos. And, you know,
yeah.
little kids in these go-karts, you know, holding up their license for the camera. And it was really a cool thing.
It's a cool way to teach kids, too.
I so wish this was around today. Now, the one that I saw in California, and I can't remember the city that's operating in right now, but... the kids are on things like bicycles, even tricycles, depends on the age.
Okay.
But it shows them more about, you know, like safety, about crossing the streets and things like that.
Oh, I see.
So it's not so much about the driving rules. It's more about how to be safe in a city environment. If you're, you know, ever having to cross the street alone, that type of thing.
That makes sense. You know what mm-hmm. I want to see now? I'm just going to go ahead and pitch this TV show to you. Cops of Safetyville.
Cops of Safetyville. Oh, not bad.
Right? So you've got the cop car. Working siren, that's important.
Of course.
And it's a mini car, and you know, they're pulling over, it's kids pulling over kids.
I can tell you that they make mini cars, you know, the Shriner cars.
Yeah.
With working sirens and lights.
Yes.
So there's no problem getting that at all. I mean, any one of these manufacturers that I mentioned, you know, will do that.
And you learn about responsibility because the kid who is the police officer function like rotates. So don't be too much of a jerk because you're not going to be in charge after Tuesday.
It's not a bad idea. I mean, there's some development needed here, but I think we can do it.
Yeah, the pieces are there. Moving on. Moving on from my horrible TV pitch. We know that although go-karts were booming in the 50s and 60s, the mini car idea, the idea of go-karts with fiberglass bodies over the chassis, right? With the plastic seats, the Briggs and Stratton 3-horsepower engines, the whole nine. We know that those were blowing up as well in the 70s.
Yeah, that's right. And the thing is that they were mostly for kids. They were mostly for children to drive in. So, you know, when the Shriners get in these things, I mean, we're talking about like some big guys, some 200-pound guys or 200-pound plus, they get in this vehicle with a 3-horsepower engine. It's not really going to cut it because they kind of want to thrill the crowd, right? I mean, they're barely crawling. So, later they started upfitting some of these vehicles with, you know, 5-horsepower, 5.5-horsepower
Yep.
engines. And, now we can see that, you know, a lot of these vehicles will have even like, you know, alcohol burning engines that are high performance engines.
Sure.
There's a lot of variation on this. It depends on what your Shriner parade unit group decides to go with, you know, the body style,
mm-hmm.
the horsepower,
mm-hmm.
the, you know, what they want to do with it. It's kind of the idea that, you know, you determine what you want to do with them and then you build or buy a vehicle to match that.
And you know, Scott, there's an element of mystery here because we're not exactly sure how many active Shriner cars are around. We're not even sure how many Shrine clubs have motor patrols.
Yeah, because there's something like 200 chapters or almost 200 chapters
right.
of Shriners all over the world.
Yeah.
And then we don't know how many of those operate, you know, these vehicles. And then you've got the whole thing about the history of the vehicles. Like for a while, Ben, I had heard that a Shriner vehicle could not be sold outside of the Shriner brotherhood, right?
Right. Like you had to hand it down or something.
It had to be passed on to another Shriner after it was deemed a Shriner vehicle, even though they're buying them from these go-kart manufacturers.
Right. You know, well, it's just a mini car at that point.
But it turns out that's not so true. I mean, because you can go right now and find Model T fire truck Shriner vehicles on sale on Craigslist.
Sure.
On eBay or
yeah.
wherever. So I don't know if that's changed recently, but a lot of times, you know, these vehicles would be handed down because, you know, some of these Shriners, they were the older guys and they're in these groups and these cars last, you know, they'll hang around for 50 years. The cars
yeah, especially
will.
If you take care of them.
Exactly.
Which I'm
right.
sure they do.
Yeah, I'm sure they do. So, you know, the vehicles hang around, the guys maybe come and go. And that's mm-hmm. the sad part about this is that, you know, once somebody passes on, you know, they maybe not donate, but they
sure,
will
bequeath it.
They will that vehicle to another Shriner in the group, and it becomes their property then, and they hang on to it until their time has passed, and then it goes on like that.
And to add to the complication, each club can decide to inaugurate or found or disband a motor patrol on its own, and then it's up to the Shrine Club, the individual club, as to what sort of vehicle the motor patrol will drive. And that's why there's such variety, which I think is a great thing. But that's also why, you know, the numbers are a little fluid.
Yeah, that's right. Now, you and I both have a tiny, tiny bit of Shriner car. I don't know if we could even call it experience, but we've both had a Shriner car in our past in some way.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
All right. So what's yours?
So when I was a kid, a wee young tyke in East Tennessee, where apparently everybody does an Irish accent, this wasn't East Tennessee. This was Nashville. We had a relative who had a little bit of farmland and had also one of those Shriner cars. And I wanted it so bad. You know how it is when you're a kid and you have a go-kart, or forget a go-kart, even a riding lawnmower,
sure.
you know, you just want to have it, drive it around. Now, I got a chance to go around just a little bit, and in retrospect, yeah, it was like driving a go-kart. But at the time, Scott, you couldn't tell me anything. I was like the Kanye West of that couple of acres, you know. And it was really neat, and I wish I could have... You know, I wish I knew what happened to that vehicle, but unfortunately I don't.
Do you remember the body style?
I remember only that it was a car.
Okay.
Only that it was, but it did have the fiberglass body.
Okay, cool. And the one that I recall from my past, I guess, was, you remember I've mentioned this a few times, I spent some time on the farm in Indiana,
mm-hmm.
Many summers, I guess, I spent on the farm.
Mm-hmm.
And my uncle, his brother had passed on, and he was a Shriner. And so in my uncle's garage was his brother's Shriner vehicle.
Mm.
And the Shriner, it was a Model T fire truck. Shriner vehicle, and it was inoperable at the time, so I never got to drive it. Honestly, I was afraid to even get into it. It kind of looked a little frail, I guess. Maybe, you know, thin wheels, that type of thing. And right. I didn't want to break it, so, you know, I went over it pretty carefully, you know, looking at it and, you know, seeing what made it tick. But I never got the chance to drive it or run it at all, so I'm a little jealous of you and being able to actually drive in a Shriner vehicle. That's cool.
You know, if it makes you feel better, I did not do a good job.
You know, later, I did buy my own go-kart.
And that's true, yeah.
And it does have, and I still have that go-kart. I bought it in, oh my gosh, I bought it in 1989.
Uh-huh.
I still have it in my garage, and it does have a plastic body on it. But it's not a Shriner vehicle. It never was a Shriner vehicle. But it does have a plastic body, so it's not just like a, you know, frame type go-kart.
And it's still running, right?
It does, yeah, it still runs.
You ever take it out?
I have not in the last couple of years because the project car is blocking it in the front of the garage, and it's heavy. These things are about, I mean...
They're a couple hundred pounds.
A couple hundred pounds, up to 300 pounds, I've seen as much for the Monza Jr. and the Chevy Jr. So
right.
They're heavy, heavy vehicles, and you know, these guys, they move them all over the place in order to be able to get them into the trailers and... in and out of trucks, you know, for the parades and everything. So there's a lot of work that goes into, you know, getting these together, I guess. And like the story that I read, you know, with a little bit of history of the whole thing.
Uh-huh.
The guy that they interviewed for this in the Midland Daily News, his name is Doug Marsh, and in his garage, now he's kind of, I guess, nominated himself or volunteered to keep about 12 of these vehicles in his own garage. And then I think he said six other members that are part of this unit keep them in their own garage separate from this, but they're all identical vehicles. So he's got 12 of these in his garage that he goes out and tinkers with, you know, I know that they have days when, you know, everybody will come over and they'll all work on their vehicles and make sure that they're in tip top condition for the events because
sure.
It's important that they're not going to break down when they're on the parade route, of course.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, if anything I've learned from owning my own go-kart is that those things will break down every day on you if you drive them. So, you know, it's important that they have them ready for this event, and you know, it's there's not going to be any disappointed kids in the crowd.
So there are also some surprises with these vehicles because I hope that everybody picked up a little bit of the implication when we said, you know, it can be tough to figure out how many Shriner cars are around because there are so many decisions that are left up to the individual Shrine Club. So I've been trying to figure out the fastest Shriner car.
Oh, really? Have you?
You know I love the hyperbole.
Yeah, I do. There's a Car and Driver article called Fez versus Fez versus Fez. So it's a three car competition or a comparison test from May of 2008. It really doesn't matter how long ago it was because these are older vehicles that they tested. But they did a comparison test between three different makes and models of Shriner vehicle.
Yeah.
Just as they would with a full-size vehicle.
Yeah, three different motor patrols from Southern California to Willow Springs International Motorsports Park. So they unloaded about 30 different vehicles, and there were 20 or so Shriners, and they all had their jackets on identifying their unit, right?
And their Fezzes,
of course. That's one thing that was really important. This guy from the Corona Riverside Shrine Club, he said it's all about showing the Fez. Everything we do is for the hospitals. And that's ultimately, again, as we said at the top of the show, that's why they're racing these cars. But let me just skip ahead here to one of my favorite parts. There's a group that took their 3-horsepower Briggs & Stratton engines and swapped them out for Honda 5.5-horsepower GX series, which gets to a much faster goal. Now, earlier in the article, they talk about how you're supposed to keep these under 10 miles an hour, right?
For the parade purposes.
Mm-hmm. And 10 miles an hour in practice means about 8.7, something like that.
Okay.
Number you can fudge around with. But the quickest truck, which was owned by a guy named Howard Smitty Smith, hit 10 miles an hour in 1.8 seconds, and 30 miles per hour in 10.6. Now, I know 30 doesn't sound like a high speed in a full-size car. Yeah,
on a go-kart, that feels like you're going about 150 miles an hour. It seems like it's so fast. When you're that low to the ground, you got the wind in your face because there's no windshield, of course.
Yeah.
You've got a lot of sensory input. We've talked about go-karts before, you know, like scale speed, maybe?
Is that how you say it? Yeah, that's a good way.
When you're that low and traveling that fast and you've got that much that's whizzing by you so quickly, you get a real sensation of speed. I mean, there's probably an equation that goes along with this, you know, that in a go-kart at this level, you feel, you know, at 30 miles an hour, you feel like you're going X number of miles per hour. But honestly, it feels like 100 miles an hour.
Oh, and just to mention that the truck he was driving was what was called a midget pickup. Now, I know that might be offensive to some people. That's just the name of that kind of style. And they were meant to look like 78 to 79 Dodge Little Red Express trucks. One was supposed to look like an 83 Chevy. So just imagine, if you will, listeners, that one of these guys is late to the parade. And so are you. And you're walking in the direction of the parade and you hear a buzz behind you. And then this tiny pickup truck with this guy, let's be honest, cramped on top of it, just sort of squeezed on top of it. Fez blowing in the wind, zooms by you. I think that one tops out at like 33 miles an hour.
Something like that. Now, the slowest one in the whole competition came in at about 8.7 miles per hour. Now, that was the one that was the pickup truck, like the Model A, like the one that I had seen in my uncle's garage. And you know what's funny about that pickup truck, Ben?
Is that
when they do the road handling test, because they treated this as if it was a real comparison between vehicles, you know, like speeds and, you know, the top speeds and braking
wheelbase,
and all that.
Yeah,
wheelbase, all that. So they did the cornering Gs on these things. And it wouldn't surprise you, I guess, that Apple Valley truck, you know, the mini truck that you mentioned, pulled something like 1.16 Gs on the road handling course, on the skid pad. The second place, which is I think maybe the coolest design. It's the Corona Riverside Racer.
Yeah.
Which looks like an old Indy car almost. That pulled almost 1 G on the skid pad. And then the truck that I mentioned, the Model A or the Model T pickup.
Yeah.
Too slow to measure even. They said insufficient velocity to even measure a G on the skid pad.
Mm-hmm. That's the one that managed to make it to 8 miles an hour in just over 30 seconds.
30 seconds to 8 miles per hour. So that is the dog of the bunch there. But you know what? When you're in a parade, you don't really need a whole lot more than that. Although, you know, some of the precision stuff that we've seen from these guys, you know, when we're watching YouTube videos of them, you know, and
right,
just personal experience, because we've both seen, you know, Shriner groups in parades and what they're capable of doing. And it's really pretty impressive, you know, as far as how close they get, how fast they go,
right?
What they do, and they go right at each other, and then, you know, last second veer away, and it's really pretty exciting to watch, and the kids love it, the parents love it just as much, because I think the parents want to drive these as well, because they see it's not just something for kids,
right?
Kids love it because it's something that they could do as well if they wanted to, really, because it's a go-kart, it's not a real car.
Mm-hmm.
It's just exciting, it's a fun thing, and it's all about getting the Shriner name out there, you know, the public awareness, right?
Yeah, it's about raising public awareness, and ultimately it all goes back to those hospitals for children, those free hospitals for children. They've been successful enough that they were, when they originally started, the age for the free care was 14 and under, and it got raised to 18 and under. So there's, make no bones about it, these people are making the world a better place. And I think they're having a heck of a lot of fun while they do it.
I mean, they raise hundreds of millions of dollars each year for these charities. So it's really, really a great cause. Now, all right, I think we've just about exhausted everything I have. I've got one more little thing, a little side note that I want to add on here, because it's kind of the typical Shriner mini bike that I want to share with you here that I think maybe some of our listeners have never heard of. And this is kind of the last thing. If you're done with everything, Ben, I'd just like to add this one last thing.
Lay it on me.
All right. So have you ever heard of a vehicle called the Scat Kitty mini bike?
I have not.
Now, the Scat Kitty is spelled S-K-A-T, and it's Scat Kitty.
Okay.
And it's a type of mini bike that was built in the mid, I think it was right around 1960s. It's a very small, very, very small mini bike designed to fit inside of a suitcase, Ben. It has folding handlebars and an aluminum frame, so it's supposedly lightweight. I think it weighs about 65 pounds total. That's
it.
So not bad. Very, very small. When you see this, you'll say, oh, yeah, I can totally see a Shriner in his jacket and his fez, you know, riding down the street, or, you know, even doing a little precision driving on this tiny, tiny little mini bike. Now, you'll find these occasionally at estate auctions, things like that. You know, just rarely will you find them because They're pretty valuable at this point. So again, it's called a Scat Kitty, designed to fold into a suitcase. The idea, I think, was that you could put it in the trunk of your car or an airplane or a boat.
Oh, that's
cool.
One.
It's kind of like a get-around vehicle if you needed it in the car, or if you, you know, were, you know, took your boat somewhere and you wanted to, you know, run into town or something.
I love that.
So it's a really kind of a cool thing. And the thing is, they must have been pretty strong because they're rated for a 200-pound rider and could get up to 25 miles per hour. And when you see this thing, they're tiny. Oh. Again, they're tiny, tiny mini bikes. So it's pretty impressive. So look up Scat Kitty and tell us what you think about that.
And just to prove that we're listening to what you think, we've got one piece of listener mail before we go out of here. Okay, Scott, our friend Peter B. writes to us from out there in Texas. And Peter says, hey, guys, recent listener, I'm trying to go back and listen to the old ones, but there are so many. Peter, we know what you mean. However, it does make my flight seem shorter. I'm not sure if you've done a podcast on the following topics, but if you haven't, here you go. Hmm. You ready, Scott?
I'm ready.
Number one, affordable roadsters. Peter says, soon I shall have one, probably a BMW Z4, but I'd be interested to hear what you guys and other listeners think.
We just did an affordable used cars.
Right.
But not specifically affordable roadsters.
Which is kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
Because I like that title. It makes me feel that I, too, could afford a roadster. Number two, electric cars. We've covered a lot of electric car stuff.
I believe so. But you know what? There's always room for an update because there's always new technology.
Mm-hmm. Preventative maintenance to extend vehicle life. He said, growing up in the Midwest, we have hot summers and cold winters, which that's familiar to you, right, Scott?
You know, I would say we've definitely got that one covered.
Yeah. Difference between synthetic and regular oil.
Yes, we have. We've done that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in fact, we've talked about the myth of, you know, doing the switchover between organic and synthetic. And,
yeah.
And, you know, a lot of stuff about oil in the past. So, you know, we've got... Yeah, most of that covered, but there's always
not
room.
The roadster episode.
Not
though.
Bad, not a bad idea. And of course, electric car technology. I mean, it seems like daily there's a new story coming out about you know what Tesla's doing or competing car companies are doing with Tesla's information that they you know recently surrendered.
Right now so, that he gave up all the patents, Peter. Let me just I want to tell you something weird about electric cars. So every time that Scott and I go in to do an electric car episode. Doesn't matter what it's on, battery life, infrastructure, a specific company, that usually has to be updated by the time we leave the studio because that's moving so quickly. So I would vote for roadsters and electric cars, definitely. Thank you for writing to us, Peter. And if you want to check out some of the stuff we've done on preventative maintenance and synthetic and regular oil, then I would say visit our website, carstuffshow.com, because that has all of our podcasts. And Scott, I think we may have passed 600 now.
Oh, I don't know. We are right on the cusp of that. I'm not sure if we passed it or if we're right at it.
Okay. And iTunes will, for storage purposes, only let you access the first 300 or so. So after that, you'll need to visit our website where you can find all of our podcasts for free. You can also find us on the internet at Facebook and Twitter where we are CarStuffHSW. And we'd love to hear from you guys with some new topic suggestions. We hope that you enjoyed this episode we just did. And again, coming from the outside in, right, we hope that we didn't incredibly mess up something about Shriner organizations. But we do hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'd love to hear what you think. Our email address is
carstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.